And welcome to Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. So glad you could join us alongside Anita Marks. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes as we'll be discussing all the latest regarding the New York Giants. Start a mini camp today, so we'll get into some of those storylines. You can also chime in via the phones, 201-939-4513 and hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter.
If they still have their eardrums working.
Why is that?
You were very loud.
Oh, okay. I don't know. I sounded all right to me. I guess the levels differentiated in terms of what was going on elsewhere. But in the meantime.
And you're a yes. little, you're spitzing. So you were out there and you were watching practice.
Correct.
Even though it is a beautiful day. Who wouldn't want to be outside?
Absolutely.
So very exciting. The next 3 days, mandatory mini camp. And then, of course, the players then kind of have their summer,
Break.
Their vacation. They don't come back until July 28th. But. So much, I think this is really going to be an exciting 3 days. So much to look for. What have you seen already?
Well, they're focusing on fundamentals. It's basically a continuation of what they did in OTAs. And Ben McAdoo has been on the record. He said that, you know, this is the time of the year before we get to training camp where, you know, the veterans can work on their craft. They're emphasizing special teams right here in day one of mini camp, where they're having a lot of different players return punts, return kickoffs. And you see they're also focusing on where on the field they want everybody placed and so forth. What was interesting was Victor Cruz has taken part in some of those special teams drills, though when they break up to offense, defense, he's been on the side doing his individual work again. But that may be an inkling that they're slowly building him up for the start of training camp, which is when, obviously, we expect him to be a full participant. So that is something interesting to monitor.
And let's face it, I mean, how exciting is that, hearing great things, actually? So while we're hosting the show, practice is happening right now. Practice is until 12:55 today. Ben McAdoo then addresses the media following practice. Players will be made available, which I'm really excited about because a lot of times players are made available while you and I are sitting here hosting the show.
Yes, it cooperates today.
And we don't get a chance to listen to what really they're saying up close and personal. So I'm actually really excited that we get to partake in that today. But in the meantime, Paul Dottino was texting me, and he said that that Sterling Shepard made this incredible grab, the sliding grab right in front of DRC today. So far, that has been the highlight. And so, again, we know what we get with Odell Beckham Jr. We've heard nothing but outstanding things about Sterling Shepard through OTAs, and I'm sure he'll do some phenomenal stuff the next 3 days at minicamp. And then you add potentially, possibly a healthy Victor Cruz. I'll say it again. I mean, I think you can, if that's the case, okay, let's say, again, fingers crossed, let's all pray that Victor Cruz is at least 80 to 85%. I think you can very well argue the Giants have one of the top, and I'll be, just to be safe here, top five receiving corps in all professional football. Would you agree with that?
Well, they finished off on a very strong note statistically last season. So if everybody's healthy and they have options, I don't see how this passing game is going to take a significant step back. I mean, worst case scenario, it stays where it is. And with that offensive production and an improved defense, there's no reason why the Giants, at least right now on paper, can't come back and feel as if they could be competitive. It's early to tell in terms of roles and so forth because, you know, we have yet to really see training camp where, you know, we're going to get a better gauge on who lines up where and so forth. But what's been positive is everybody's been getting opportunities between OTAs, and I expect the same thing during the course of minicamp. You mentioned the receiving core. There's a lot of depth. Remember, they brought in a lot of undrafted free agents. And we've talked about that in great detail, how I think a lot of these players who are unknown commodities could very well, you know, have opportunities to battle for spots on the back end, whether it be the fifth spot or the sixth spot, because, you know, we all get caught up in the top three or four wide receivers. Dwayne Harris should be included in that group, but five and six, I think, is really wide open at this point.
Yeah, I mean, but again, I mean, it's just a few spots. You know, I mean, we know that the majority of the spots are taken. It's not like this is like, for example, Cleveland Browns team.
Where there's more
right?
opportunities.
Where
Correct.
Where
yeah.
there's more opportunity, but, you know, which I'm sure will make it all that much more exciting as well.
Absolutely. We want to remind you that Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com and to promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. For those of you watching on Twitter, we invite you over to Giants.com to watch the remainder of the program. Lance Meadow, Anita Marks with you here on Tuesday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. discussing the start of mini camp next 3 days, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, mandatory mini camp. And then obviously the team will break before the start of training camp in the latter part of July. So this is going to be a continuation of emphasis on fundamentals, learning the scheme. Third down and red zone efficiency is also a big emphasis here during mini camp, given where the Giants finish statistically on both sides of the ball in those areas. So that is something that will be an entertaining conversation to have, depending on how much they implement over the next 3 days. You want to open up the phone lines here at 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter as well. Let's start with the lines. Tommy's in New Mexico. He gets us going on Tuesday's edition. Tommy, what's happening?
Not much, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Welcome in.
Doing well, Tommy. What do you have for
Excellent.
Us?
Well, I kind of wanted to talk about Charlie's favorite subject and talk about the O-line a little bit. I had I listen every day and watch every day, so I talked to or I listened to a guy talk about going back and watching film. So I actually went back and I checked out some film from last year just to see how Newhouse held up and kind of see what I thought about him, you know. And I noticed that he did a decent job, but what I'd like to see out of Newhouse is really just finish guys off, you know what I mean? And one other thing I did notice that I'd like to talk about and just take your comments off the air is the Washington game I watched. That was a really impressive game from Keenan Robinson, the middle linebacker.
The linebacker came up from the Redskins. Which game, just out of curiosity, are you referring to? Because remember, there were two games. Are you talking about the one here at MetLife Stadium or the one in D.C.?
I believe it was the one in D.C.
Okay, so
he
the second match.
He was everywhere on the field for coverage. Like all, well, maybe it was a later game because Will Tye was playing. But he was on every tackle and all the coverage. I was really impressed with him. But, yeah, I just wanted to kind of bring that up, kind of calm Charlie down with Newhouse. I thought he did all right. Just like to see him finish guys off. You guys have a good day, and I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you.
Tommy. Appreciate the phone call. Tommy, it's a lost cause, though, to try to calm down Charlie. I mean, listen, I tip my cap to you. I appreciate the hard work and the effort, but nobody's ever going to calm down Charlie. Let's face it. We got to live in reality
and
here.
And why are we poking the bear right now? Why are we poking him?
Who, Charlie?
Yes.
He's
going to
call in, and he's going to chime in regardless. Are you kidding me? Come on.
But I mean,
it doesn't even fall into the category of poking
the bear. But let's not give him extra motivation.
You don't
to
have
do
to
it.
Give him extra motivation. He's going to call in no matter what we discuss or anything. Plus, we're making his day right now, the fact that we've mentioned his name, because he takes a tally in his notebook and his notepad at home. But anyway, in all seriousness, on the topic at hand, which is what Tommy, the last caller, brought up about Keenan Robinson, and Robinson coming over from the Redskins, remember, they were a 3-4 defense, so they used four linebackers, Washington, and you know, he's had experience on the outside, he's had experience on the inside, and they're also utilizing him in both spots here when he spoke to the media about 2 weeks ago. It will be interesting to see where they leave him more often than not. I mean, I would not rule out if they're happy with the production from Jasper Brinkley, and they feel that he's their best option at middle. Now, Keenan Robinson could be one of the outside linebackers, considering in Washington's scheme, as I mentioned, they used him in both spots. And Robinson, when he spoke to the media, he mentioned, hey, when I was in the nickel, you know, I was used differently than perhaps when we were running our base defense when he was more of an inside linebacker. So he's got the versatility that I think they can utilize him, not identical to how the Redskins utilized him, but they can certainly move him inside and out here.
Yeah, I mean, listen, when was the last – I don't remember ever being as excited as I am right now in regard to the linebacking talent that's here at camp right now. I just don't.
Well,
I mean,
there's
for the
some
past,
depth and there's some options here.
I mean, but for the past few years, I mean, it's when you look at, you know, all your areas on defense, it's been the one that's been really the biggest lackluster in regard to the excitement around it, the talent around it. And now we're sitting here, again, I'm expecting big things from Devon Kennard. I love the new rookie that they drafted, B.J. Goodson. I can't wait to see what he can do. There's a legitimate competition for the middle linebacker position. Casillas might challenge J.T. Thomas for that outside linebacker position. I think it's an exciting time at the linebacker position. I can't wait to see how this all kind of pans out.
Well, we've already seen some of the battles play out throughout the course of OTAs. That's only going to continue in minicamp. They're moving players around, and you have a nice mixture. I think the best way to sum up this linebacking core is you have veterans and you have young guys. unprovens and established players. And I think if you compare this group to some of the previous regimes, I think there's a little bit more balance in this year's group compared to what we've seen in previous years, where, you know, maybe they were relying a little bit more on youth to pan out quicker and there wasn't as much veteran presence. Here, I think he got a nice mixture. So, you know, that obviously bodes well for the competition purpose. Pat is in Orlando. Pat, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing today?
Doing well, Pat. How's things with you?
Hey, good, man, good. Well, I actually just want to kind of you guys are talking about linebacker and core, too. I kind of actually want to talk about a little bit the running back situation we have in. You know, we have over, what, five guys right now competing for the – it seems like the starting running back spot. And it just – you know, I know there's some specialty guys there with Shane Vereen and whatnot, but – you know, all honesty, man, that's actually something of concern in my eyes as a Giants fan. So.
I mean, let me ask you: do you really feel that they're competing for the starting? I think they're competing for more playing time. I think Rashad Jennings is your starting running back. I think Shane Vereen will be utilized. In fact, by the way, Shane Vereen caught a long bomb.
From down the sideline. I was out there when he caught one. He may have caught another one.
Oh, nice.
I think Shane Vereen's going to be utilized a little bit more in the passing attack. I'm sure, you know, considering that this is an organization that spent a draft pick on Paul Perkins, which, by the way, this is going to be our real first taste of seeing what Paul Perkins can do, because unfortunately, because he played at UCLA, you know, when you do draft a guy from the West Coast, Oregon, UCLA, USC, it's kind of hard. They can't participate in OTAs because their finals are on a different schedule than those on the East Coast.
True.
But nonetheless, I mean, tell me if you think I'm wrong or you disagree with me, and that is, I think Rashad Jennings is your starting running back. Now, is he going to get 20, 25 carries a game? You know, that to me, that's the question, is how will the touches be distributed? Will they be like they were on the early onset of the season or towards the end? I think that's more the question.
Well, it's inconsistency. I mean, you look at Rashad Jennings. I mean, he's a great running back. You know, I honestly think, I mean, I don't disagree with you. He should be a starter. It got to a point last year where, you know, we're talking about finishing ball games, and when he got the ball, defenses were just collapsing in on us, and he wasn't, you know, breaking any tackles or anything, in my eyes.
I was going to say, I think you could say that pretty much about the running game overall. I mean, there was inconsistency from real top to bottom. I don't think in particular it was just when Rashad Jennings was on the field. And when it comes to who starts, you know, it's more about the production you get. It's not so much who starts the game. For example, 11 guys line up on defense and offense. It's all based on what the opposition presents. I would not get too caught up in who starts the game. It's a matter of, you know, if they decide they want to use three running backs, can all three be productive? And that's what they're really looking for right now. They're looking for the balance and productivity.
Yeah, that's true. I'm not trying to diss Rashad. I mean, I think he's a heck of a running back and whatnot. It was just, you know, it gets frustrating because, you know, you go back in the, you know, big blue, you know, wrecking crew type of, you know, motto where you're just pounding the football, and it's completely changed now with the passing game, which is phenomenal. I think I'm just really excited about this season. I think the receiving core, linebacking core, I mean, it's just, you know, I think we have one of the tops in the league. So,
well, there's depth at those positions that you named. And, I mean,
yes.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Pat. I think you said you were concerned about having the depth. I know you used the word concerned. Maybe I misinterpreted it.
No, I'm sorry. No. I'm not concerned at all. No, I apologize.
No worries. I just wanted to clarify.
No, it was the running. It wasn't the depth in it. It was just last year we didn't really have that much depth in those positions.
Well, I think the difference is this year you had depth last year. The problem was also guys couldn't necessarily stay healthy. Right now, everybody knock on wood is in good shape. So that means you're going to have more competition from the start. And, Pat, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in. To get back to your comments, Anita, I mean, I do think Jennings is in the driver's seat to be probably the first guy up. As far as the other roles are concerned, I think that remains to be seen. I could certainly see Vereen having a bigger role this season, depending on how much of the playbook they want to open up to him. You know, Perkins is an unknown commodity right now because we have yet to see him on the field. You know, Darkwa has been banged up. He's been on the sideline. And Andre Williams, from a physical standpoint, Williams is a different player. I think he's really been focusing on slimming down, getting in shape. Mentally, his approach, I think, has changed. Let's see if that translates to the football field.
Yeah,
that's the big storyline with him.
He's done a lot of martial arts in the offseason, hoping that that will help him out in a big way.
And everybody has a different trick of the trade that they go about their business with in the offseason. We've seen Justin Pugh. He also worked with Jay Glazer last summer, where he was also doing martial arts and so forth to get into shape.
I think Pugh looks bigger this year. Do you feel that he's...
Bulk up,
meaning-wise?
Yes. I think you could
a
say
little
that.
Bit, right?
That's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, remember, he was also moving around in positions, so I think he's saying to himself, now, this offseason, I know I'm a guard, so I know... As long as my body is in a position where I handle the guard, the chances of them moving me around the tackle are probably slim, given the fact that at least you have Ereck Flowers coming into year two and whatever the battle plays out on the right side. In previous off seasons, Pugh, and he spoke about this, there was sort of the unknown. Am I going to be a tackle? Am I going to be a guard? And so forth. So I think there's a little bit more clarity this offseason, which probably has helped his workout regimen. Q is in East Orange. Q, what's happening?
How you guys doing?
Doing well, Q. How's things with you?
I'm doing fine. And Anita Marks, it's my first time actually calling in and being able to talk some Giants football with you. So,
well, welcome.
So it's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
The last time I called up, first let me start off by saying this. A lot of callers were reacting to my comments about the right side of the offensive line, about Newhouse and Jerry. And they were saying that, Giants fans are getting, they're going overboard or we're panicking or anything like that. It's not even nowhere close to that. I think football is about competition as far as, you know, each skill position, not, you know, each position. And I think coaches in the offseason, they bring in young players, veteran players, whatever have you, to challenge those players for their position. I think every offseason, every beginning of the season, in preparation for a new season, you always have to bring in competition to keep players on their toes. So having said that, I don't see any competition that we brought in for a Newhouse. And I don't see, I mean, I know we've made a few like I stated before, we brought in a few free agents, veterans, whatever, but, you know, nothing to really make you want to, you know, get too happy about. You know, I'm not downgrading or whatever the transaction the Giants made.
Really quick. I know that Solari, they've actually brought in some offensive linemen that Solari has coached at one point in time before. Right? I mean, this is something that that Paul Dottino had mentioned to me.
I mean, I don't know who in particular he was referring to.
Okay, well,
I mean, he's worked with Theo McAdoo a little, if that's what you're referring to.
But I mean, no bells and whistles here. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly. Anita, I don't want to cut you off, but can I continue? Because
yeah,
I want to
yeah,
make my
course,
point, and I'll let you guys take calls off the line. I just want to say it, and then I'll let you guys, address my comments offline. Thank you. To get back to what I was saying, so I don't really see any real competition for Jerry and Newhouse on that right side. Now, furthermore, the last time I called up, I made a statement about a press conference that a pre-draft media conference that the Giants had, and it was on this website. And I remember listening to when McAdoo was addressing the media, and he was asked about the upgrades and potential free agent moves or pre-draft questions about, you know, where the Giants might go or picks that they might select. And when he was talking about Newhouse, he said that, like I said before, he said Newhouse, I don't want to correct myself because I said the wrong thing. He said that Newhouse is a solid player, but he's not a right tackle. That's what he said. Now, before I previously said that, he said that Newhouse wasn't a starting right tackle. But correction, he said that Newhouse wasn't a right tackle. So, like I said, this was the pre-draft media press conference when he addressed the media before the draft. So The reason why I'm harping on the offensive line, like I said, I'm not worried about it. Of course, we all know the numbers that, you know, as far as the sack numbers, Eli was one of the least sack quarterbacks in the NFL. We understand that. But, like, the point that I brought to you guys was that those numbers are deceiving. Because if you get rid of the ball in 2.67 seconds, I don't know defensive lineman that can get to a quarterback that fast. Even if you're unblocked, you're probably not going to get to the quarterback that fast. So, having said that, my point was that, okay, so if you made that comment during the pre-draft media conference when you addressed the media and you were talking about the offensive line, and then, you know, everything passed the draft and the free agency period, and you didn't really bring any solid competition in to compete with him there. So that's my point. It's confusing. I'm not worried. I'm confused about what really was going on. Like, why would you make that statement?
Well, listen, Q, I'm not doubting what you're thinking. I mean, I'm trying to find the transcript. To be honest with you, off the top of my head, I don't remember Ben McAdoo ever saying that Marshall Newhouse wasn't a capable right tackle. I'm not saying that you misinterpreted whatever you saw or heard, but, you know, without really going back to the press conference and hearing his exact words, you know, I don't know for sure if that was the exact language that he used. Because okay. I've heard McAdoo refer to the right-sided line. I've heard him say that it's an unwritten script, an unfinished story. I've never heard him say in particular that Marshall Newhouse is not a right tackle.
Let me finish. Now, this video was on the website.
Well, listen, there's been plenty of press conferences. I'm just saying that I don't remember, and I was at all these press conferences or I watched them. I don't remember him ever using the language that Marshall Newhouse is not a right tackle.
Okay, well, I would suggest that, you know, we go through this giant, the giant video archive, because I guarantee.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If you find that video, what I'm saying,
I actually downloaded it, and I erased it because I had too much, you know, too many videos on my phone. So I download everything from the website. I download this show, which I love much. I download all the videos. I download everything. And I downloaded that video because I was so locked in on the draft. And I guarantee you those were his words. Now, like I said, I corrected myself before I said, you know, because I was so caught up into the conversation and I said that he said that he's not a starting right tackle, but he didn't say that. He said he was not a right tackle. He never said – he gave him credit. He said he was a solid player. He's a backup. He was brought in to be a backup, but he said he was not a right tackle. Now, it's starting to sound like a contradiction because now I guess everything done as far as the free agency period and the draft pass and, you know, is still not – time for, you know, the beginning of the season, September 11th yet, so we still got, you know, some time to bring someone in yet, but, you know, that is still a mystery right now. Like, those the statements that he made and the fact that, you know, nothing was brought in. Now, okay, now, this is another thing I wanted to say, and then I'm gonna let you guys, you know, take another call. Okay, let's just say, okay, Newhouse does start. Newhouse and Jerry. We have been This is 4 years in a row that we haven't had a decent running game. Now that goes all the way back to 2011. Even when we won the Super Bowl, we weren't a great running team.
It emerged in the postseason.
In
the postseason is when the running game really started to take shape.
The postseason, of course, but during the season as a whole, if you want to just tally up all the games, no, we wasn't a great running team that year. Eli Manning almost had 5,000 yards passing this year. So we were basically riding his coattail as far as, you know, offensively. And I commend him for that. I love Eli for that. But my point is that the running game on that right side, and you and Paul got online and looked at the stats, the rushes per average, and the averages came up, and I think Paul pulled them up, and there it was. Like, the right side of the line was – we simply wasn't getting – well, as a whole, the offensive line isn't great. This isn't a great run-blocking offensive line. But, you know, my point is that, okay, we're saying, okay, cohesiveness, everybody as far as the offensive line to get along, knowing what the next man body was going to do. Okay, but what about the running game? That's what I'm really basing it on. What about the running game? You can't keep putting Eli Manning. I don't care who you have as a receiver. when it comes time for third and long and you can't maintain a block, and I mean, I'm not saying that, please don't, because I want to make myself clear. The only reason why I'm bringing up the offensive line, because he addressed every other issue. Every other issue. I mean, I have zero complaints. I am completely satisfied with everything that Jerry Reese has done, and he has taken some slack these past couple
of
years.
Well, Q, what you have to understand is the running game, it's not just the offensive line. It's also the tight ends, how you use them. It's also having a healthy backfield. You know, all of those factors are going to help the running game improve.
Yeah, but I don't care who the running back is. If you can't block, if you can't run block, it's like you're running into a wall.
Of course, but I'm also saying is that the decision-making of the running back is also part of the running game, too. It's all different facets. It's not the offensive line's important, don't get me wrong, but it's the decision-making of the running back. It's also about, you know, what the play call was and whether or not the tight end they're running off of and so forth. There's a lot of different dynamics. So, you know,
I agree with you with the tight end part. That's something that I hope that can improve this.
Well, and by bringing in Jarrell Adams, who has been known as a blocker and as a big body, depending on how they utilize him, you know, that's something that they're hoping is going to help aid the running game, too. And, Q, listen, we want to get to a few more callers.
Okay.
Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in.
Really quick, just to throw out the two offensive linemen I'm talking about is Ryan Seymour and Dylan Farrell. Now, both these guys, this is more for depth than anything.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, no bells and whistles here, but both of them played for Solari. Solari was their offensive line coach, and I'm sure, with that being said, had a say in regard to, hey, listen, let's bring these guys in. Let's see what they can do. But again, I mean, you know, they were brought in more so to boost the depth of this offensive line to compete with Marshall Newhouse and to compete with Bobby Hart. I don't know.
Well, and they also brought in Byron Stingley, who's a veteran who was with Tennessee and so forth, has had 7 years in the league. Doesn't necessarily have ties to Mike Solari. There's been players that have been brought in. The point that Q's bringing up, and I understand the viewpoint, is they're not household names. But to say that people weren't brought in is misleading. They're not household names that appeal to everybody because you may not have heard them and you may not have seen them play. But until they get out on the field and the coaching staff evaluates these guys, you truly don't know what you have. And there's limited contact in terms of OTAs and minicamp. So I think come training camp, we'll have a better idea of what that group that we're talking about is going to be made up of. But I think right now, Newhouse, Jerry, and Bobby Hart perhaps competing are probably the three guys that are going to be up first. Could somebody else emerge in training camp? It's possible. But right now, I think those are the three main guys that are going to be competing for the two spots on the right side.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what we've seen in terms of the rotations in OTAs and minicamp. Let's head back to the phone lines here. We got Marco in Connecticut. Marco, what's happening?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Doing well, Marco. How's things with you?
Doing great. A couple of thoughts. I've been listening. I probably haven't been able to call in since before the draft. So there's a lot of I've listened every day. Here's a couple of things with the offensive line. I agree. Those two players that Anita brought up, I was thinking about that when I was on hold. They've played for Solari, and then I think you just say between Hart, Newhouse, and Jerry, two out of the three are going to be on the right side of the line. I'm okay with it. What's happened here in the offseason and the talk that's gone on, I think John Jerry and Marshall Newhouse have heard a lot about it. And I'm excited to see what Bobby Hart's going to do in year two with the new offensive line coach. So I'm not as negative about it as a lot of other people. And that kind of ties into my point about depth. Just depth in general. I know there's been a caller who's called in a lot complaining about the depth on this team. All top teams included in the league, I don't think there's a coach who will sit – like, there's not a team in the league that's complete at every position. And I know that's just it's a real general obvious thought to make, but you really need to think about that. With the parity in the league, the Giants did about as good as you could ever hope for in free agency in the draft. Coming off a year where they had the injuries that they had, a lot of question marks going into free agency. I mean, I guess if you had to just pick out a little bit more, do you wish that there was a legit starting right tackle and starting guard? Yeah, I guess you could. But like I mentioned earlier, there's guys that are going to compete for those two positions that are names. They're guys that can play on other teams in the league.
The other thing to keep in mind, Mark, I'll let you continue. You know, everybody's going based on what happened in 2015, and I'm not saying that those numbers should be thrown out the window, but we have yet to see this offensive line, which worked together on the field for the majority of last season for the first time last year, get back on the field in a game situation or in a physical situation where you can actually say, okay, the group's improving. The group still needs to work on this. So continuing to rehash 2015 is fine. I understand that's the evidence we have to go by. But to say that there hasn't been improvement from this group, I can't say anything right now because I have nothing to go by because they have yet to make contact with one another with defensive linemen. So let's at least see what happens in training camp, see what happens in the preseason before we start throwing out the continuing narrative that this group hasn't improved. Because there's really very limited substance to go by at this point.
And Lance Flowers played on a bad ankle.
Yeah.
So whatever the Pro Football Focus has ranked them, I don't think they're taking injuries into consideration there. I just had a point that I missed. Oh, about 2015, that's the key. The big key to this season, regardless of what you think about the schedule and top quarterbacks that we're playing against, is – can the team stay healthy, because they haven't been able to in 3 or 4 years. And the 5 or 6 games that came down to 1 minute or the last 2 minutes or the fourth quarter, can the Giants find ways to win half of those games, all of those games? That's going to be the big key. But I just have one thought and then one question. I'm excited about Paul Perkins. I was going to ask about if he was back with the team. I guess he is now that I heard what you said earlier.
Yes.
And the whole four running back situation, 3 or 4 running back situation, that's another issue that I'm looking at. I think we're going to find out, is that a McAdoo thing or a Coughlin thing of last year? Because they had 4 guys last year, and it truly didn't work out. And now if you go into the season again with Jennings as your starter, but you're sprinkling in Perkins and Vereen, you're not utilizing Vereen as best as you know you can. And I know I just have a lot to say, guys. Sorry. But I know the stats show that Vereen maybe statistically had a better year than he did 2 years ago in New England. But if you watched him play for the Patriots, you truly did not see that same effect with the Giants last year. So I think he needs to be utilized more. And then back to what I was saying, I don't think we've come to a conclusion if we're still playing 3 or 4 guys there.
Marco, let me just throw this out here. I mean, keep in mind, this has been brought up a lot last season, and the running game did get better late in the year when Jennings did become the workhorse. I'm not disagreeing with you there. But in 2008, when the Giants had arguably the best running game in the NFL, they utilized Derek Ward, Ahmad Bradshaw, and Brandon Jacobs. And if you go based on the numbers, there were games where they were working those guys in and out. I remember games that I could point to, that Carolina game where Derek Ward and Jacobs both ran for over 100 yards. So, you know, there's been principles within the Giants organization where they have had 3 options and all 3 have been very successful. So, I can't go by simply saying, well, last year didn't work out, so therefore this running back by committee is impossible to go by, when there's been years where the Giants have adopted the same philosophies and they've actually had success there.
Yeah, but a few things really quick. Number one was their offensive line was a lot better.
Of course. Well, that plays a role too.
Number two, you're talking about 3 as opposed to 4. And number three, if that makes any sense, is that I believe the Giants were more committed to running the football. Last year, the Giants fell behind. They passed the ball so much. I'd be curious to go back and kind of look at the stats and see how many times, what was their running percentage compared to their passing percentage.
Well, in 2008.
They passed the ball a lot last year.
Absolutely. Well, those factors certainly play a role. But what I'm saying is regardless of the scenario, I'm saying that you can have success with 3 running backs. That's my point. It's been done before here. And obviously there's a number of other factors that need to be right for it to work, but it can be done,
is my point. But also, you know, it depends on a running back. I mean, not all running backs. You have a running back that needs the carries, needs the touches, needs at least, like, you know, 5 or 6 touches before they really get into a vibe and a flow and a rhythm and a feel for the game. I mean, there's, you know, every running back is different. You know, there's some running backs that you can just give the ball, you know, 7 times to in the course of a game, and he's going to rush for 50, 60 yards and hopefully score a touchdown for you. There's others that cannot. They need that repetition. They need that in order to kind of get their engine going. Every running back's different.
Lance, I like your point. I like your point about 2008, but I think then let's say if we have 4, maybe 3 are your, you know, who's maybe Vereen is in the bulk of the game, and then Jennings is your starter, but who's going to be the guy that's closing us out? Giants keep the ball at the end of the game. We're in the, you know, we're in the formation to kneel down. Who's that running back that's going to wear them down?
I think Giants want it to be Andre Williams. I think they're hoping that could be Andre Williams.
Well, I think Jennings could take on that role too.
Jennings is your starting running back. Vereen is the one that kind of you mix in different style, utilizing the passing.
Sure.
His question is, when it comes down to the fourth quarter, Giants are up by 10. 7 minutes left on the clock, and you just want to see them just run downhill and eat up like 5 minutes of that clock, who's the guy you give the ball to?
I still think Jennings could be the guy. I don't see a problem with him having multiple roles. I mean, he's more than capable of running in the 4-minute offense and so forth doing that.
I think at his age, this is where I disagree, I think at his age and his lack of durability and his issues in regard to him being injured in years past, I don't think he should be both those guys. I don't think he should be your starter. And oh, by the way, 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Let's hand the ball off again and again and again and again. I think what I'm saying is, I think it would be fantastic if this is the year that Andre Williams explodes onto the scene and becomes that guy. I'm hoping that that's what happens. I mean, you know, only time will tell.
Can I ask one quick question, guys, and then I'll hang up. Going into the draft, Anita, I was listening to every show, and I heard you were big time on the Miles Jack train. And I've wanted to ask you this, but I haven't been able to get on. I was curious when the injury news was coming down about him and people were really concerned about that. What was your take? Did it kind of digress from being, you know, all in on him? And then especially when the draft came and he was passed by so many teams, how did you feel about that, and what's your take on him going forward?
Thank you, guys. This was my take. Everything that I was hearing from a lot of the analysts, I made some personal phone calls to scouts and coordinators who and people in the know who knew about his injury. And so here's the big question mark about Miles Jack. Miles Jack very well could only last 5 years. I feel that his talent and his ability and what he will mean to a defense, to me, drafting him in the first round and getting him for 5 years is worth it. So I still would have gone Miles Jack. But I totally understand why the Giants didn't. Listen, the Giants have now, unfortunately, a history of losing some first-round draft picks because of injury. Thank goodness JPP is back. And really excited to see in regard to what percentage he will be back this year. I'm expecting bigger and better from him. So I totally get it, and I totally understand in regard to the history that the Giants experienced, why they felt they needed to pass on Miles Jack. And who knows, maybe the Giants weren't as big on Miles Jack as I was or other teams were. I think he was an absolute steal for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And all eyes will be on Miles Jack in regard to how long his career will last. The thought process is Miles Jack is eventually going to need microfracture surgery on that knee. When does it happen? Does it happen after year 1? Does it happen after year 3? Does it happen after year 5? Does he last past year 5? Everyone I spoke to was telling me year 5 is kind of is that breaking point where they feel like once he has microfracture surgery, now it's less than a 50-50 chance that he'll come back and be that stud linebacker that we saw him be at UCLA. So to me, though, 5 years of a Miles Jack, because of his talent, his ability, and what he'll bring to a defense, to me it was worth it. But maybe that's not why I'm not a general manager in the NFL.
Big Blue Kickoff Live brought to you by DraftKings. Now, if you never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way we play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. All right, let's head back to the phone lines, and we check in with, we've got Jerry in Columbus. Jerry, what's happening?
Hi, Giants fan since 1956, and when I used to go to the games at Yankee Stadium, they cost $1. Thanks to Mr. Mara, if you were in the first 1,000 people in the old Yankee Stadium bleachers behind center field. And that was the year of defense. In any event, I do try to follow the Giants as close as I can out here and the Buckeyes, and so I'm very familiar as a layman with Eli Apple, and I want to talk also about Eli. But first I wanted to say, Anita, I wish you were the Giants general manager, and I don't think we'd have the same problems year after year.
I don't know about that.
And that has to do with the offensive line. I hate to be so repetitious, but what I have noticed is that Jerry and Newhouse tip off almost every single time if it's going to be a pass. Maybe they're just not that athletic or they can't bend, but if you look, you can see it's going to be a pass because they don't get down in a three-point stance. And so I'm sure the defensive players know that also. And when they do get down, then they know it's going to be a run. And I think the problem with Williams last year in his second year, and he had like the second worst average per game. And here's a guy who set all sorts of records at Boston College for running. It is that he doesn't have the quickness that Jennings, when he's healthy, has, the shiftiness, which Perkins has. But Williams could be terrific if he had an offensive line, if he had the giant offensive line of 2007, 2008, and some of these guys obviously were, like David Deal, were either low draft picks or free agents, Sean O'Hara. And they need offensive linemen. One of the big problems is the sadness that Schwartz was a bust, and Giants still owe him, at least in dead cap money. They owe about $16 million next year. It is a poor way to run the organization, in my opinion, because next year when they need to sign guys like Hankins, they're going to be limited because of all that dead cap money.
Well, they're still in a very good position, though.
Too many free agents now.
Well, Jerry, keep in mind, they're still in a very good position health-wise, financially, and you could carry cap space from this year over to next year. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about, you know, what position they're in to sign free agents. And keep in mind, you know, the left side of the offensive line was built through the draft. So while everybody's focusing on the Newhouse and the Jerrys of the world, which is on the right side, and those are veterans, the entire, from the center to the left, those were all guys brought in via the draft. And you can only build one aspect of the team through only so many ways. You got to address other parts of your team, too. So you can't use every single draft pick on the offensive line.
I want to address, they could have drafted Taylor Decker, offensive, was first a guard and then a tackle for Ohio State. He won a championship, and the guy is going to be a pro bowler. He's 6'7", 3'10", and he can bend. He's sort of like a Joe Thomas on the Browns, and you can't get better than that. And just because he might have been the third or fourth rated offensive tackle doesn't mean that he's not a better play with a better future.
Well, but
Apple.
Jerry,
and
all I'm going to say is
Apple. He has great character.
Well, Jerry, all I'm going to say is
years,
with respect
and he
to
has never played slot back.
Jerry,
he has a problem.
Jerry, with
one last point, he has a problem with his hands. He plays very aggressive, very physical, but when he does that, those are the kind of things that the NFL referees are going to call for defensive holding or interference.
Well, that's one of the biggest challenges that most corners have. I don't think it's necessarily just Eli Apple, but keep in mind, That's your interpretation of Taylor Decker. And I'm not saying that you're off, and I understand you've seen a lot of Buckeyes games, but just because to you he's the third-ranked offensive lineman doesn't mean the Giants scouting department had him in the same position. So when you say that they should have taken him, that's under your assumption that that was where he was ranked in the Giants book and the Giants board. He may have not been that high. You at least need to keep that in mind as to why they perhaps went in a different direction under those circumstances.
You're right. But I am terrified that if Eli gets hurt, there goes another season. And it's true that the Giants are trying to get Eli to pass the ball in 2.5 seconds, and that's all for the good. And yes, it's hard to make a sack in 2.5 seconds, but Giants won 6 games like this. They have had losing seasons, and they need, I hate to be so repetitious, to address the right side of the line because it affects the running game as well as the passing game. And you have talent there in the center and the left guard and the left tackle, but you have below-average players. And all throughout the year I've been listening day after day to you and to John and to Paul and Anita and the punter, Feely, and
Feagles.
You're all making the same points that I'm making before the draft. Now we still don't have improvements in the right guard, the right tackle. And it's going to be, you have to hope the other team has enough injuries and problems that we could get a few wins. But this is not a way to build a championship team. You need a right guard and the right tackle. And it's not Jerry, and it's not Newhouse.
Well, Jerry, listen, we appreciate the phone call, and thanks so much for weighing in. As I mentioned, you know, the other aspects of the team needed to be addressed, too. Let's not forget about that. And that's exactly what the Giants did via the draft and free agency. And the defense had to improve based on how it finished last season because the defense was on the field a lot in those late games, which didn't necessarily have anything to do with the offensive line. Now, you can make the argument, you know, if the offense picked up a few extra first downs, they would have been able to run out of the clock. I understand that. But, you know, let's not forget, there's three facets of a football team, and the defense had its fair share of struggles. This offseason, they addressed that side of the ball so that that aspect can improve, so that there's not an additional strain on the offense to have to go out and score 30 to 35 points. So, I mean, I understand we're constantly focusing on the right side of the line. If the Giants are going to get to the playoffs and they're going to have success in the playoffs, it's going to be much more than just what's happening on the right side of the offensive line. I'll tell you that. There's other aspects of this team that certainly need to turn around based on how they finished last season. Right side of the line could be one aspect, but it's one of many. And the defense needed to be addressed too. And you have to do that through free agency of the draft. You can't just say offensive line is the only priority. There's other facets.
As I said a little bit earlier, while we're hosting the show, practice is taking place. Paul Dottino is out there, and he's been texting me some highlights. So just to get you up to speed, because I know that it's not like we have a camera out there where you're watching practice as well. Sterling Shepard made a sliding sideline grab in front of DRC earlier today. Cruz has looked great running wide receiver drills. Shane Vereen went wide and toasted Collins on a bomb. Miles White beat Eli Apple in the end zone on a crossing pattern for a touchdown. Wade grabbed the ball out of Shepard's hands and ran for a touchdown today. Lewis dropped an easy slant. Cruz is taking snaps, but only jogging. He took 3 snaps with the starters, jogged his routes, caught a pass, and left flat. So just to kind of give you an idea, here are some of the highlights from day one of minicamp.
All right, let's head back to the lines. T's in Maryland. T, what's happening?
Beautiful Anita Marks. How are you guys doing today?
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you for spending your lunch hour with us.
Yes. You know what? I was going to call, then I wasn't going to call. And then everyone is talking about the line. I'm not even going to talk about the line. You know what I'm going to talk about? I'm going to talk about Paul Perkins. Because from what I've seen, because I've been looking at his college clips and his highlights, man, I think this kid is going to be something special. Kind of sucks that he wasn't able to attend the OTAs, but he's there for mini camp. So I'm looking forward to it because I think that this guy is going to be like I don't know. You know, remember when Dave Meggett was around and, you know, we could use O.J. and Hampton and then Meggett would come in and he just would change the pace of everything? I think Paul Perkins is going to be the same type of guy. I really think so. And like I said, I'm not even going to talk about the line because, like I said last week and the week before last and week before last and the week before last. Hey, we just have to wait. Just have to. They've been together a year. New off season, new coach, different voice, different scheme, or different regimen. So give them time. I think we'll be fine.
I hear you, T, and that's exactly what we've been discussing. The fact that you also need to see more work on the field before you rush to judgments about, you know, where this group has come from, where it ended off last season. And appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
You know, keep in mind, they always talk about the transition, going from college to the pros, the speed of the game. But more so, I think, than any position, because of the beatdown, because of the pounding that running backs take. I think it's a really, really difficult position for running backs to come right into the NFL and have sustained success just because of all that they have to go through prior to the NFL season starting. And when you hear about the first-year players hitting that wall, I don't think any position player hits a wall as hard as, no pun intended, as a running back does. I mean, you saw it with Todd Gurley. I mean, Todd Gurley, I know he missed the first few weeks of the season, and then he hit the field strong. He was putting up great numbers. He was rushing for touchdowns. But if you recall, he kind of tailed down towards the end of the season. So big expectations for Paul Perkins. I'm excited, just like the caller said, in regard to see what he can do. But realistically, I think it's one of the most difficult positions in regard to hitting that first year wall for a running back. I really do.
I mean, I think you can point to a number of positions, and I think a big part of it is, remember, in college, they're only playing till the beginning of December, and then they break, and then they may play a bowl game, they may not. In the NFL, you have that additional month, and then if you make the playoffs, you got to go even further. So there's the adjustment period in terms of staying in shape, staying with a regiment all the way from the latter part of July when training camp starts all the way potentially through February if you're lucky enough to get to the Super Bowl. So that's the challenge alone, just the schedule, considering the college season is that much more shorter than what you have to deal with at the NFL level. Let's head back to the phone lines here. And this was the build-up that started at the beginning of the show. We finally have hit the pinnacle of the program. That is Charlie in Portland, Maine. Charlie, what's happening?
Hey, guys. I felt a tremor in the force. I can only imagine.
Tremor?
Charlie, this show must be right up your alley, because I think everybody must have hit on the offensive line in some capacity.
I have done my work. Everyone else has finally realized it, so...
Well, that doesn't
really
mean they agree with you.
It.
It's just that your topic of choice has carried on, I should say.
Hey, I got a question for you. Bosa isn't in the OTAs because he hasn't signed his contract. So I'm wondering if Goodson, who hasn't signed a contract, which I don't know why, is at the OTA mandatory OTAs today.
Well, Goodson's been through all the OTAs, even though he was unsigned, he had not missed anything.
Is he? But he's here today. He's in the mandatory ones today.
You know, to be honest with you, I didn't see much of the defense while I was out there for the session, yeah. So I don't want to speak out of line. I wasn't necessarily going through the roster. I have yet to hear anything that he's not here. I'll tell you that.
Okay.
So I mean, I wouldn't be alarmed
because I didn't understand why Bosa wasn't there. Because I know if you don't sign a contract, you can't go to the camp. You can't, you know, do training camp. You have to have a contract signed by then.
Well, there's a long time to go before we get to the latter part of July. So I wouldn't be overly concerned about that. But,
right.
I mean, to answer your question, he took part in all of OTAs, and he did not sign a contract. And a number of the other rookies were in that department, too. I mean, they eventually signed, but they also were with the team taking part of activities before they officially signed on the dotted line, too. I don't think that's really unusual in the NFL.
Hey, Anita, I just want to ask Anita a question. Are you part Italian? Because you use your hands a lot when you talk.
I use my hands a lot. Yes, I am not Italian.
Okay.
But my mom was adopted, so not sure exactly. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. My family thinks a little gypsy. and then Russian Irish on my father's side. So.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. I talk a lot with my hands.
Charlie's doing a great job beating around the bush, apparently. You know, why don't you really get to why you called the program, Charlie? You know, I mean, you're killing us here. What are you going to ask us? Our entire family histories here? Let's talk shop here, okay?
Okay.
Let's talk shop.
Yesterday, Kashawn called in, and she was talking about you know, what kind of schemes that we run on the offensive line. Do we do, like, power blocking or, you know, pulling guards? On the right side, I think we do two or three things. One thing is fall down and pray. That's one of the schemes we use. Another scheme is the Matador scheme, is like, ole, watch him go by. And then the other scheme is, Eli, watch it, here they come. But that's, I mean, we have a problem there, and, I mean, you can say all you want, but.
Did you hear Eli's comments at his? I guess he spoke to the media at a golf
yeah.
charity event that he
what
had.
What else is he going to say? You know, he's going to say no. I don't have any confidence.
No, I don't. Obviously, he's not going to say that. But one thing he did touch on that we don't. I mean, and I get it. We as media, you as fans, you look at physique, you look at talent, you look at athleticism. But one thing that I don't think is discussed enough. You hear the players talk about it, and that is unity. That is, you know, when you have a group of offensive linemen that are returning. And have played together, and they've developed. I mean, that unity. It's not something that's created overnight. It's something that takes time, and that's something that Eli Manning, you know, touched on when he spoke to the media the other day. And I think you have to give that. There's value in that. In the fact that.
No, I agree with that.
Okay.
But the thing is if you have two tackles who are the worst tackles in the NFL, rated by. Other organizations.
Oh, now it's other organizations. You're not even giving credit to them anymore.
All I'm saying is that they at least could bring in talent to compete with these guys and, you know, bring in some good blue-chip talent to compete. You know, we're hoping that Flowers is going to take a big step forward. I don't know what we're hoping on the right side, because I don't see these guys are who they are. I don't see how they're going to – well, maybe just because what you just said, Anita, because they're going to be together and they go out and have dinner together and they're just going to – you know, so that's going to make them better offensive linemen together, I guess. But I just don't see – we should have brought in some talent to compete, and we really didn't. And that's the main issue that I see, that we still got $18 million of cap money, so we could have finished, we could have completed the project. You know, it isn't like we ran out of money and we just fixed what we could fix. We got money sitting there, and the thing is, I still think, I hope that Davis is going to be a New York Giant. He's going to be the right tackle. He doesn't want to play in San Francisco. He wants to come back. So Lori was his line coach. It seems to be a perfect fit that he ends up in New York. Maybe that's not going to happen until the last week in August, but I got a feeling this dude is going to be a giant, and that's going to end up being our right tackle. So that's what I'm hoping.
All right, Charlie. Well, appreciate the phone call. Variety of things can happen between now and the end of training camp. So I wouldn't necessarily rule anything out, but I also – would cautiously point out that under that specific scenario for that player, he currently is on the retired list, and there's a number of things that would have to play out before he even becomes eligible that a team would want him and he's able to play. So a lot of things that need to be taken into consideration before you even get to the stage of, you know, do you want to acquire him? What would it take to get him and so forth? I think right now the mindset is who's on this roster, who's in camp, is priority number one for the Giants to evaluate. And your point, Charlie, about, you know, having $18 million or so left, nobody says that you have to spend that. And also, if you don't think that the players out on the market are worth paying for, then you don't use that money and you carry it over to next year's cap. And there's nothing wrong with that. And plenty of teams have done that in the past as well. I think we lost Charlie, but, you know, that's another thing to take into consideration. It's not as if the money's burning a hole in your pocket and you're required to spend it. You have to want to spend it, and there has to be value out there to spend it on. That's the other thing to take into consideration. You don't just throw $10 million to another offensive lineman who's out there just because perhaps you feel we'd like to bring in another body. You could do that with an undrafted free agent or something else.
I'm trying to think. Who is the offensive lineman? His name is on the tip of my tongue. From Baltimore, who ended up somewhere else. He was like one of the top offensive linemen.
You talk about Osemele?
There you go. You know, prior to free agency, I was hearing, you know, there was speculation out there that the Giants were interested. But, you know, maybe
remember, he went for big money, though.
I was just going to say.
I mean, he was one of the early free agents to go, and he was one of the most highly paid offensive linemen.
Right.
He does have versatility. He was moved around in the tackle and the guard spot. But
Where did he end up, by the way?
He ended up with Oakland.
There you go.
But that is what happened very early in free agency. You know, a number of people who have called in about bringing in other players and maybe bringing in players now that are out there on the market, you're not spending $35 million, $45 million for somebody on the market right now. But that doesn't mean that even if it costs you $1 million, you just say, hey, we're going to throw $1 million out there. It's all based on the evaluation process. And I think right now they are going to work with the internal options, and then they'll go from there, depending on what they see in the rest of minicamp and then the rest of the training camp. But at this point, I think you have to focus in on who's on the roster as opposed to who may be out there and who may be an option down the road. Well, that will wrap things up for us here on today's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. Minicamp continues Wednesday, Thursday, and we'll have Big Blue Kickoff Live each and every weekday this week.
So I'm back with Jeff tomorrow. And then are you in on Thursday?
I am with Jeff on a Thursday.
And you're Jeff with Thursday. And then Paul Dottino and I will have a Big Blue Kickoff mini camp wrap-up show on Friday.
There you go.
And you know Paul, man. Paul's going to have it all. He'll have it ready to go for you.
I'm sure he's taking notes as we speak.
He was so funny. I spoke to him this morning, and he said, I'm so excited. He said, because, you know, we all have other jobs than just Big Blue Kickoff Live. And so Paul said, I'm so excited. I get to watch every minute of every practice the next 3 days.
So he's
going to be all over it. And so I'm really excited to host with Paul. We'll have a wrap-up show on Friday.
Well, at least that makes one of us. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number moving forward for the rest of the week. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday. We'll speak to you tomorrow right here on Giants.com.